For over a thousand generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the Old Republic, before the Dark Times, before the Empire. A young Jedi named Darth Vader, who was a pupil of mine until he turned to evil, helped the Empire hunt down and destroy the Jedi Knights. Vader was seduced by the dark side of the Force.
Lord Vader?
Yes, Master.
Rise.
Welcome, everybody, to the Brendoman.com podcast for Sunday, November 7th, 2004. And as you can see, yes, I have been sucked in by George Lucas yet again. Just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in. The Episode 3 trailer is quite amazing, even though it's like only like a 30 seconds worth of new footage, but man, I don't know, I'm a total nerd and it just sucked me in. I'm really excited about it, and I'll have to watch it in like Beijing or someplace, drive, take a train down to Beijing and watch it, or I don't know what I'm going to do, or just watch it on DVD, but you know, that theater experience, especially for movies like that, nothing can beat it. So once again, I'm George Lucas's bitch, and I'm going to go watch that movie. And, yeah, I guess I'm a flip-flopper on that too, folks. But you know, you throw in some lightsaber fights and you got Samuel Jackson kicking some ass and some other cool stuff in that trailer, and I'm a sucker for it. So, yeah, consider me flip-flopped. Got some good stuff on the show for you today. Some segments from Danny and Sarah Ferguson. We finally got Sarah to record a podcast. She talks about some stuff, election stuff, and Danny's going to be on with his Linux segment, and I'm going to be talking about a few things, not much. It's a little late in the day. I've been really busy this weekend, so this is going to be kind of a, I always say it's going to be a short podcast, and it really isn't, but this is just going to be a toned-down version because I have had a really busy weekend, and I figured I'd kick it off with talking about that. I have a really good friend that I met at teacher training in Palm Springs, and he was assigned to teach in Suping, which is a very small city in Jilin Province, China, which, well, first off, let me say that if, in case you didn't know, I'm broadcasting live from Harbin, China. I know we have new listeners every show, so just so you know, I'm a teacher in China, broadcasting from China. Anyway, so my friend Seth, he came to visit, and we went to Harbin's famous tiger preserve, Manchurian Tiger Preserve, and there's over 70 tigers there, and you drive around in this bus, caged bus deal, and frolic with tigers, and they jump on the bus, and like they jump at the cage and feed them meat and stuff, and it's awesome. I mean, I was seriously like, there was a tiger less than a couple inches away from me, and there was only a cage separating us, and it was cool. And they also have lions and a couple panthers, some jaguars, and a lynx, and a cheetah. Yeah, it was pretty neat. Very cool experience. It was really cold. It actually started snowing here. It snowed on Friday. It snowed a little bit today. But yeah, it was freezing. But it was a lot of fun. Had a good time. And we also got to watch them for a pretty good chunk of money. You can order a animal to feed to the tigers. They feed it to them. You don't feed it to them. They take it out there on a truck. And so my buddies and I, we pitched in and we got a sheep. And you can get a cow, and that's the most expensive thing in there. It's really expensive, so, but a cow probably would have been better, would have taken longer, but, so they stick this sheep out there, and it's gone, and about, like, I mean, they basically, I mean, they're feeding, like, 10 tigers with this sheep, and the tigers grab it and ran off in the bushes, and so it wasn't super exciting. I mean, it was exciting for about 2 seconds, but it was cool, and, yeah, so we got to watch a sheep get fed to some tigers, and that was my weekend. And we also went around town. Went to the downtown area here in Harbin, which is a lot of Russian influence and a lot of Russian architecture, because Harbin was started, the city, actually, when it was actually turned into a city, it was started by the Russians. And so there's lots of Russian influence in the architecture. There's lots of huge, well, there used to be lots, as now there's only a few, but there was a lot of, there's some churches, some very beautiful, elegant churches, like cathedral type things with Russian spires and things like that, and it's very cool. So I took them around there, and then we went and bought some, went to our DVD lady, Susan, who's wonderful, and one of my friends, Rob, bought a lot of DVDs, and I got a new DVD case because my other one's full, and then the smaller one that I bought from her is full, so I bought a new 240 DVD case, and I'm excited about it. And then she also hooked me up with Sopranos Season 3, because I have one more episode to go on Season 2. Man, this is like my new favorite show. I mean, I love it, all these shows that I watch, but Sopranos, I really dig Sopranos. And, I think I like 6 Feet Under better, but I really, really, Sopranos is exciting. And you never know what's gonna happen next. And then I also got the first season of Star Trek Next Generation. Figured I'd start in on that while they're cheap here. And so I got the first season of that. So that was my... Oh, yeah, we also went shopping because Siping, a lot of smaller cities in China, you can't get, like, any foreign food. I mean, Siping just got a KFC. They don't have McDonald's. And you can't really get a lot of foreign food. So Seth and my other friend and Rob and I took them shopping to get some foreign foods and some other stuff, and then we went to McDonald's because I hadn't been to McDonald's since we were in Beijing in September, and so that was cool, and we just had a good time, and today we went out to eat, and then they went home. Oh yeah, we also went bowling last night, so I would have recorded the show last night, but we went bowling, and then we watched some Family Guy, and we got back here, so just too tired to do anything, and I've just been go, go, go all weekend. So that's why there hasn't been an episode. But, back in here, back on track, and it should be, a good week. So one more thing I figured I'd talk about China, is an article I found, about, it's from, I don't know where this is from, The Globe, and it talks about, from cells to bells, 10 things the Chinese do far better than we do, and it's talking about America. And it's a top 10 list of things, and I can pretty much attest for all of these, but I figured I'd talk about a few of them. And the first one is cell phones. And it says, by any standard you can think of, coverage, price, ubiquity, China's cell phone practice is bidars. You can use them in elevators, subways, and parking garages. They work in Tibet, at the Great Wall, and remote rural China, which is more than you can say for Ontario cottage country. Patients, doctors, nurses, and visitors use them in hospitals, too, with no apparent ill effects. It's cheap, pay-as-you-go system, with no stupid monthly contracts or credit checks. The phones are so cheap, even sidewalk cabbage vendors have them, that China is now the biggest cell phone market in the world. With 300 million in use, each one telling time, wristwatch sales have plummeted. That's true. We're a nation of thumbs, a young Shanghai woman told me, meaning that Chinese use cell phones like Blackberries. Text messaging friends 24/7 at 1.6 cents a pop. The Chinese never got used to voicemail or answering machines. Installing home phones is equivalent to 2 years' pay in the 1980s. So the country leapfrogged over landline technology right into cellular. So, yeah, it's really awesome. And I'm probably going to go get a cell phone sometime this week. I've been kind of putting it off because I've been saving some money. And, yeah, I mean, everybody here communicates via text messaging. I think I'm missing out on a huge opportunity to talk with my students because I don't have text messaging, and that's what they do all the time. And the thing that's really weird about, I'm still going to get used to in China is there's no voicemail, even on cell phones, and there's no answering machines. They don't exist. I mean, I can't get an answering machine for my phone. And I just think that's a part of Chinese culture I'm having to get used to. Just, I mean, if people want to talk to you, you either get a hold of me or you don't. It's not like this answering machine business. So that's why text messaging, I guess, has been so prevalent here. And everybody and their mom has cell phones. It's amazing. I mean, if you thought America was bad with cell phones, don't come to China. And I'm thinking of getting one because they are decently priced. They're really cheap. I mean, for the really, really nice phones, they are really expensive, but for just a basic phone, I mean, I think my friend Peter got a really cool one for like 300 kwai, and then it's a pay-as-you-go contract. It's not even a contract, just pay-as-you-go. And, so I think I'm going to get one, but I think I want to get a camera phone so I can moblog. That'd be really cool. Okay, then you got informative stoplights. In Tianjin, a city of 13 million people, traffic lights display red or green signals in a rectangle that rhythmically shrinks down as the time remaining evaporates. In Beijing, some traffic lights offer a countdown clock. During a red light, you know whether you have time to check that map. On a green light, you know whether to start breaking a block away or to stomp on the accelerator. And this is true even in Harbin. We have countdown clocks on all the stoplights. And so you can know, like, how long you have to wait or when it's safe to walk. And it's very helpful because traffic here, just people drive insanely. I mean, if there's still 10 seconds on the clock, don't even think about crossing the street because people drive nuts. So it's very helpful. Transit debit cards for, so in Shanghai, you don't have to use tip money or tokens or tickets to pay for taxis or anything. We don't have that here, but that is really cool. So you just need this debit card to pay for things. And adult playgrounds. No, not like those kind of adult playgrounds, but in Beijing, there's free outdoor exercise equipment in neighborhoods throughout the city, walking machines, ab flexors, weight machines, rowing machines. And they're pretty simplistic. I mean, this isn't like nice gym equipment. It's just kind of simple stuff, but it's all over the place. I mean, I've even seen it around in Harbin. These places, they're like playgrounds. You can go and work out and exercise. And it's really cool. And then anti-theft slip covers. What do you do with a purse in a restaurant? It can slide off your lap, and looping the handle over the back of your chair is an invitation to a thief. In China, when you sling your purse or laptop over or coat over your chair back, a waiter hurries to toss a tasteful slip cover over it. And yeah, that's one thing they do. They also give you to put in your purse instead of like in stores and things like that, they give you these slip covers also to put your purse in. So you don't have to give it to them to check your bag. You can just put that over it. And then you can't open it till you get out of the store. So that way they know you're not putting stuff in your bag. You can also check your bags for free. And it's very nice and handy so you don't have to carry them around while you're shopping. And every major store I've ever been to, even the little supermarkets, have bag check places. So that's pretty darn convenient. And then also at the restaurants, these slip covers, they're really cool. Daily banking. Chinese banks are open 9 to 5, 7 days a week, even on New Year's Day and national holidays. and full network of ATMs. And so it's I don't really do a lot of banking here except for when I'm withdrawing my paycheck, but it's awesome. And then this is also really cool. I've seen this in a few restaurants in Harbin, but pretty much everywhere in Beijing. Trying to flag down your waiter for a glass of water, just press a made-in-China gizmo at your table. Your table number lights up on a panel inside the kitchen, and your server is soon hovering by your side. And so you can just, you need the waiter, you just buzz him. And you don't have to yell or do anything. And then also, this is really cool. I noticed this right away when I was in Beijing. In China, roadside electronic billboards not only give directions to nearby lots and garages, they crucially reveal how many empty spaces are left. So parking data. Very cool. And then, I haven't seen this yet, but I know it's around, I've heard about it. Computer seating maps. Like at the Shanghai Grand Theater, the black granite ticket counter is embedded with a Samsung computer screen which lights up with the event you want to see, showing unsold seats, color-coded by price, and the sightline to the stage. There's even a bar stool on which to perch while you consider your choices. Movie theaters offer the same service. You choose which film and what's showing, and the screen on the counter shows you what's unsold. So yeah, I haven't been to the movies yet here because every movie theater in Harbin does not have any English whatsoever. No English dubbing, no English subtitles, even on American movies. They redub them in Chinese with no subtitles. So I don't really have a... Yeah. And then also, finally, they have free hemming. Like, when you buy pants, or they will tailor them to you for free. And it's cool. The only clothes I bought in here are ones that I've had made, which is awesome. And it's cheap. I mean, it's really cheap. Custom tailor. Great stuff. So yeah, things that are cool about China. There's lots more that but if I can think of some, I'll tell some more later. But that's basically it. I guess now we're gonna listen to what Sarah has to say. So let's welcome Sarah to, the podcast. You can hear from Sarah. She writes at Danny's website, which is danny.brendoman.com. So, take it away, Sarah.
After refusing to get her hopes up, and still having them dashed, Sarah Ferguson had these thoughts on the day after the election.
I realize that, to many, I sound like a sore loser. Honestly, all I am feeling now is confusion. Confusion over the record voter registration numbers, voters who rushed right out to vote for someone who dominates with fear. Confusion as to why on earth people would choose tax cuts for the rich, unjust war, and numerous lies over common sense and the truth. Confusion, and yes, anger, over the fact that my fellow Christians continue to tell me that voting against Bush is voting against the will of God. I am confused about the magic eye poster that is the Electoral College map, with its giant red USA probing its way off the page and feeding my uncertainty. The blue left behind lies dormant in its two-dimensional state, not strong enough to make a difference. Not that the presidential election is all I'm confused about. 11 states voted on same-sex marriage bans, and all 11 passed. Could someone please explain this to me? How does the marriage of two individuals of the same sex destroy the already skewed vision of marriage we already hold? I was floored when I found out earlier this year that my state, Missouri, voted 60% in favor of banning gay marriage. 60%! And now I can see that one state voted 90% in favor of a ban. I don't even know what to say about that. I can't make it humorous. I can barely even say it without internally combusting. And yet it is the truth. Obviously, President Bush is not going to take my advice. He's not going to listen to someone who voted against him and who urged others to do the same. But I am going to tell him what I think anyway, because it is my right, unless he decides to change that too. Don't ignore the fact that some people don't agree with you on virtually every issue. Don't ignore the fact that some find you morally reprehensible, in spite of the fact that you won for your so-called moral values. Most importantly, don't let people's disapproval become your main motivation for leading a country, completely contradicting what we deem important. Give us a break, okay? We have to live here too.
The day after an interesting conversation.
2 days after the election, and one day after my hopes were dashed upon the rocks, I had an interesting discussion with my conservative Republican father-in-law. We began discussing the election results, obviously, but moved into more personal territory. I told him of my confusion, of how I feel hopelessly out of touch with the rest of the Midwest, of my refusal to believe that banning abortion and same-sex marriage is the answer to the world's ills. I told him that because I operate in the gray area of life, I have a hard time accepting the Republicans' black and white views. He, being the kind person that he is, listened. He did not criticize my thoughts. He actually probed further into the reasons behind my beliefs. His compassion does not stem solely from our relation by marriage. Jim has tried to have civil conversations with other liberals in the past, including with his own mother, and they have always ended in conflict. I also listened to him. I listened as he spoke passionately about the hesitance to get behind a candidate who does not support a partial birth abortion ban, who wants a somewhat socialist health care plan for America, who thinks the war in Iraq was a diversion. I listened as he spoke of Democrats' tendency to shy away from the liberal label, something he thinks they should embrace. This is not a man driven by fear to vote for a Republican. He actually has something to say. And even if I disagree with his policy, I can't disagree with his intellect. Reflecting on this simple conversation, I realize that I have not solved any of my own confusion. I am still at a loss over my views being unrecognized in a sea of red electoral votes. I cannot see how less government involvement, tax cuts for the rich, bans on same-sex marriage, and an inadvisable war in Iraq is favorable. Yet I am not as depressed over this confusion as I was 2 days ago. My father-in-law has felt this same confusion when Democrats were in the White House. He is convinced that he will feel it again one day. Maybe it is this constant ebb and flow, the give and take, that fuels our political system and allows this kind of discourse to take place. Without one, how could the other exist? For Radio Brindleman, this is Sarah Ferguson.
All right. Thank you very much, Sarah. We really appreciate your input, and I'm glad to have a female perspective on the show. And that pretty much just basically voiced everything that's been going on in my head the last week. I was talking to one of my friends, the only other liberal Democrat on my team, and we just vented for a while, and we talked, and I said some of the same things that Sarah said, and it's also good to have discourse with people that don't agree, have the same beliefs with you, as long as it's civil. I'm just open for civility here, and being able to still get along in the end, and that's what it's all about. Because, you know, I don't think I can really. I mean, I just, I don't know how to say this. I don't think that we're gonna be able to really change each other's minds on certain things. And so sometimes I think fighting over it, it's just not worth it, especially when friendships come into play. And some of my best friends don't agree with me politically, ideologically, I don't know. But you know, they're still my friends. They're still some of the best friends I have. And I'm not going to let those be compromised because of some disagreements. And so that's what it comes down to. But it's also good to have friends that agree with you, which is why I love Danny and Sarah so much. And especially being in the Midwest, it's difficult sometimes because it's a pretty red state. And so sometimes it's difficult, especially where Danny and Sarah live. So it's always fun. But we really are in the minority there. And so that's pretty much it. I thank Sarah for being on. I hope we'll hear from you again soon. Okay, so Danny just emailed me, and he brought up something interesting. This is breaking news, folks. Danny emailed me, and he was talking about Bloglines has a... Here's what it says. Come on. It says, Bloglines, it's a great service. I depend on it now, and it would be hard to live without. They've been giving it away for free, but they're signing on advertisers now. So if they put ads in and then offer a paid service without ads, what would you do? One, pay the $5 a month, I'm guessing here, to not have the ads. Or what if it was $10? What if it was $20? Would you look at the ads? Or three, give Bloglines no money and use the ad block extension to block all the ads? And here's what I wrote. I wrote, hey man, Well, actually, I'm recording the show right now because he asked me. But I wrote, Blogline is great, and also it's become part of my daily life. I remember when Danny and I got back from NYR, the first thing we did was check our blog lines, and we had quite an accumulation of new feeds and new posts and stuff, but it was like the first thing we did. Anyways, I wrote, Bloglines is great, and I think I would pay for ad-free, but I would first see if the ads were that intrusive, and then I'd probably go through with it, and if it was too much of a pain in the butt, I think instead of using the AdBlock extension and not giving Bloglines any money, if it was something like probably $5 a month, is probably the most. $10 is pretty steep. But if it was like $5, maybe a flat fee for the year, like if it was $29.95 for the year, or I don't know, if it was like $10 a month. Well, I don't know. $10 a month isn't so bad. If it was $5 a month, definitely I'd pay. Because Bloglines has proven its worth to me, for sure. Because, you know, you gotta pay the bills somehow. You gotta pay the bills. And with a thing like Bloglines, I mean, that's got to be a huge hosting thing. That's got to require a lot of money, and so they got to get to pay it somehow. So I don't blame them for, I don't think they're selling out or blah, 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 you know. I mean, so we'll see how that goes. But that's an interesting thing to bring up. If you have any input, you can also let us know. Remember, we'd always love to hear from you on the show, either by your email or your audio comments, and you can send those to brendoman@gmail.com or check out our website at radiobrendoman.com. So thank you, Danny, for that email. And a lot of you have been asking, well, not a lot, but some, a few people have been asking about the band, the song that intros our show that we use a lot, and that is called Carly Anur by a band called The Valets, who I'm really good friends with, my friends Phil and Janelle Vecchio, who I they were my good buddies in college, and then a few of my other friends from college at Biola, they formed a band a few years ago, and they, my friend Phil, his record label Pop Vox Music, they put out a couple CDs, and Phil's given me permission to use that on the show, and also for Indie Feed, and so for Indie Feed, I just put this together, I've been doing a couple things for Indie Feed already, this is the song I did for Indie Feed, and it's called Purple Eyes. So we're going to play that with the Indie Feed intro and outro, just so I can test it and also so you can hear it. And this is Purple Eyes by The Valets.
Get your free independent music at Indie Feed.
The Valets are a drama rock husband and wife duo, along with a few of their friends, from Orange County, California. Here is their song, Purple Eyes.
Thank you.
That was the Valets with their song Purple Eyes. You can find more of the Valet songs on the PopVox Music CDs PopVox Christmas and Our Ladies of Independent Rock, which you can order at www.popvoxmusic.com.
Get your free independent music at IndieFeed.
Alright, well there you go. That should be up on IndieFeed probably tomorrow. I still gotta do a couple more things with that. Last couple weeks ago, I put up my first Indie Feed podcast, which was the Impact Players song, 2K, which you also heard on this show. And it actually got a pretty good response, so that's really cool. If you haven't checked out Indie Feed yet, you can check them out at indiefeed.com. Well, I think we're going to call it a night. I think we're going to... we got some stuff I didn't talk about. We'll save that for next show because it's getting kind of late, and I haven't really done any vegging today, and I'd like to do some. So, we're gonna finish off with Danny's Linux Minute, and then we'll say goodbye. So, take it away, Danny.
This is Danny Ferguson with the Radio Brindle Man Linux Minute. If you can't get your hands on an old computer to install Linux on, you may consider a dual boot setup. It is possible to have Windows and Linux on the same hard drive on the same computer. Of course, you won't be able to run both operating systems at the same time, but when you start your computer, you'll be able to choose which to boot into. Dual booting is tricky. It's a lot harder than a normal install. If you're going to try it, there are a few things to keep in mind. First, install Windows first. Windows doesn't play nice with other OSs. Install it, and then Linux will be able to set up a bootloader that gives you the choice. Second, leave an empty, unformatted partition when you install Windows. If you already have Windows installed, it is possible to make a new partition using a program like Partition Magic, but it's very risky. You definitely want to back everything up before trying that. It's easier to do this when you're reinstalling Windows, or installing it for the first time. That's about all I can tell you in 1 minute, except for this. Read some guides and be careful. I don't recommend this. It's not the best way to get familiar with Linux. It might be one of the best ways to get frustrated with Linux, though. For the Radio Brindle Man Linux Minute, I'm Danny Ferguson.
Alright, thanks Danny. Well, that's going to call it a night for us. I forgot to mention, this is our 10th podcast, so hooray, I mean, that's a milestone, 10 podcasts. And we haven't, we're still going strong and getting better every show, I think. Got a lot of good response on the last show, and I was happy because I thought I sucked. And I guess people enjoyed it. So, people are still downloading the show at a pretty good rate, and I'm really happy, and I really love doing this. And so be sure, if you want to participate, to send in your feedback, your audio segments. You can do that at sendthemtobrendoman@gmail.com. If you need help, feel free. You can email me at that address also, or just comment on our blog, or just get a hold of me, okay? Because I would love to help you with that. And until next time, our next show will be on Wednesday. So we will catch you on Wednesday for our next show. Have a good day, everybody.